Welcome to the show. I am Carol Jean Whittington, your host of Beyond Chronic Burnout. I'm the Chief Energy Officer here at Whittington Wellbeing, where we talk and help all people get through burnout, to get out of burnout, to stay out of burnout, to live your passions and your dreams in the world, because you, my friend, make a difference. Today, my guest is Ben Van Hook, and we're going to be talking about self-advocacy in the burnout journey. How do we begin to advocate for our needs and what it is that best supports us along the way, be that at home or at work or at the grocery store and beyond? My guest, Ben, is an ADHD master's student at George Mason University. He currently works at the Organization for Autism Research as their community support coordinator. Ben is a disability rights activist who has spoken about inclusion reform in education and the workplace at the United Nations, at the Global ADHD Summit, and several colleges around the United States, from Stanford to Johns Hopkins. I'm really excited to have Ben join us today. Ben, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be on, and I look forward to having this conversation with you.
Oh, it's always great to chat with you, Ben. We always have something fun to talk about, and you have always just such a great energy about you, and I love to have a conversation. You know, when we talk about burnout, I think we got to kind of talk about what burnout is for you, so that our audience has a point of reference and a place to kind of align with, you know, hey, this is something I can relate to. Because, you know, so often we get these portrayals of burnout, but they don't always match with our experience of burnout. And so I think it's so important for each guest that I have on the show to share what burnout and what that experience has been for them. So Ben, share with us what burnout has been for you, my friend.
Yeah, for me, burnout happens when I'm feeling very intense emotions. Sometimes these emotions can be very overwhelming and I just can't really function properly. A really good example happened about a month ago. One of my best friends passed away due to ALS. And for the longest time, for like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I just entered this stage of burnout where I couldn't really do my work. I wasn't really able to concentrate and I began to shut down. I wasn't able to function as properly. I wasn't able to even get out of bed most days. I wasn't able to take showers. It'd be like 5 to 6 days at a time where I would just lie in bed, not take a shower. I would struggle to even get up to eat and it would just be really difficult. Like I'd just be glued to my bed. I'm not even doing anything on my bed. I'm not like listening to music or I'm not even on my phone. I'm just sitting with my thoughts, trying to process and comprehend my emotions. And as a result, I just don't really get anything done. And I also don't really feel better at the end of the day. I still feel worn out, even though I'm sitting in bed, not really doing much, because I am doing a lot, like internally, I'm doing a lot of processing and a lot of emotional work. And sometimes it feels like I've just climbed Mount Everest or I've just run a marathon at the end of the day, even if I'm just sitting in my room doing nothing. So it can make basic functioning really difficult. When it comes to different tasks like going to work or going to the store or doing basic chores like cleaning or washing the dishes, it can also affect that because I just don't really have spoons to do some of the most basic, some of the smallest tasks I otherwise would have been able to do within like 5 minutes. So burnout can really impact me when it comes to my basic overall functioning.
You know, you brought up a couple of things that I think are really important to talk about when we're sort of diving into the variations and how each person can experience burnout. And what you were saying is, you know, it's this emotional, this high intense emotional experience that can cause me to shut down and burn out. And even though my physical body isn't doing a whole lot, you know, of activity, my internal thinking, my brain, the processing, the energy I'm expending in what people can't see is tremendous. And I think that gets, overlooked a lot, because somehow it's got to be a combination. You know, somehow you have to physically expend energy as well as maybe mentally or emotionally expend energy. But sometimes it's just that one area that can be the biggest energy drain. And I think that's such a good place to kind of talk about, how do we begin to advocate and help share what this experience is with somebody else? Because, you know, everybody's experience of burnout or distress, you know, the negative form of stress that sort of really drains us, can be different. So, I mean, Ben, how do you start to communicate this? Like, how did you start recognizing this for yourself first?
I started recognizing it, I think, when I stopped responding to messages. I was off of LinkedIn for a few weeks, and I just wasn't really able to get out of bed. And I wasn't really able to even work a full day, 8.5 hours at my job. I started recognizing it when even the most simple tasks just became so incredibly hard and so incredibly time consuming. And when I couldn't even like take a shower, when I couldn't even like eat, and also like when I just, there have been times when I struggle to fall asleep, I'm just twisting and turning in bed, even though I hadn't done anything all day. I'm unable to fall asleep because the thoughts can be so pervasive and the thoughts can be so overwhelming that I'm just thinking about them all night. As it relates to self-advocacy, it can be really difficult to advocate for yourself when you're in a phase of burnout, because at least for me, I get into these doom spirals where I just hyperventilate. I have a mini panic attack where my heart just starts racing and I don't know what's really going on until after the fact. And I don't really know how to support myself, how to help myself in the here and now, because the panic attack is like happening in that moment in time. And I'm afraid to like reach out to people for help because I don't want to like be a burden on them. I don't want to overwhelm them with what's going on. I don't want to scare them. So usually what I try to do like in those moments in time is focus on the room around me, focus on like the different shapes in the room, the different objects. I try to remind myself that in this moment in time, I'm safe. Nothing can really hurt me physically. And sometimes I have to force myself to get some water, even if I don't have the energy. I have to tell myself the only way we can get through this is to get some water and maybe walk around a little bit, pace the room, and see if you calm down in a few minutes. So it can be really difficult advocating for your needs when you're in this burnout period or when you're in a shutdown, because sometimes you don't really know what's going on. You don't really know what's happening as it's happening. You only kind of understand what it's like after the fact when you are able to look back on the experience and then just comprehend and process like what just happened 5 minutes ago, what happened 10 minutes ago, what happened yesterday, and how could this have been avoided? How could this have been prevented? So self-advocacy in the moment in time can be really tricky.
Oh, it most definitely can. And, you know, this is something that I talk about and share in the Unveiling Method when we're talking about our burnout experience. And especially because for me, I shut down. I will melt down, but it is a much rarer occurrence. I am like, first and foremost, I will shut down. And that's sort of, as I see myself shutting down and experience that in the past, then that's the more that's happening, then I know I'm moving into burnout, because that is the warning sign for my distress, where my needs my nourishment needs are going unmet. And I can look back on that now and be able to create sort of that list for myself. So I've got those internal warning signs of how did that feel in the moment. And then I've got those observations of those external signposts of what was I picking up? How can I start to recognize, you know, things that I'm doing or not doing that I normally value or that, you know, normally happen in my life or are present, so that when I see those things shifting on the outside, I can catch it, because that's where burnout signposts start to show up first. The warning signs start inside after you've been burnt out. And by then, when you feel it, it's too late to stop the thing, right? But it's, that's kind of really what you're talking about is so important. And it's also to remember, like, in the moment when it's happening, you're probably trying to figure out, and it's like, okay, I know I need help, or I want to be able to ask for help, but I can't, because my brain is not in that place to process in that way, because our nervous system is, you know, way the heck up here, and we're in this fight, flight, freeze mode, right? And so I think it's sometimes also, as we're becoming aware of that, if we're in that in the moment, for somebody that's kind of with us to also be able to say, it's okay right now that you can't say anything. I'm here, and I'm going to just try and do some things that I think are going to help based on sort of what we've done in the past that may help. And then as you start to sort of come out of that, then that's a really great place. And I think this is part of that self-advocacy piece where we then can write down, kind of journal, sort of brain dump, you know, what are the stuff that came up for you? What are you kind of recalling, so that you can create this list, like kind of I call it like a go-to list that you can share with your important support people in your life and those people that you're in relationship with. Because I'll tell you, I mean, being on the outside as also being the person that's been in a relationship with somebody who's been in burnout. I'm usually the one that's in burnout, but, you know, sometimes I've had my partner be in burnout. When we're both in burnout, boy, that's a tough one. But but when you are on the other side and it's the person that you love and care about that's experiencing this distress and burnout and shutdown, you want to help, but you don't always know what's going to work best for them. And in that moment, it's really kind of hard for them to tell you that, because they may not know. And just caveat here, guys, most of us don't know what we need. There are 30 basic human nourishment needs, and we can usually name 5 or 6 of these suckers. So if you can only name food, water, shelter, clothing, you know, physical safety, money, and, you know, those basic things, and you don't know the rest of them, it's okay. You know, stick with me. I'm going to teach you those things. But, you know, those are big. So Ben, as we sort of talk about how that experience comes up, you know, some of those barriers, it's definitely like in the moment, you can't always communicate that. Yeah. What are some things that you found kind of help you start to navigate this, to start bringing in some support as you're advocating?
So I see, like, at least from my experience, I see a shutdown as like an internal meltdown. Because while you might be shutting down from like the inside, you're not really talking to anyone. Like inside, your mind is just full of chaos and you're just trying to like process so many different conflicting emotions that are just fighting against each other, whether it's guilt, whether it's grief, whether it's anxiety, whether it's fears of something or worries. There's so much going on in there. So even though it looks like a shutdown and it feels like it's an internal meltdown, we're not really melting down in front of people. Like you're not really physically throwing objects, but it feels like your mind is just shattering glasses all over the place. It feels like there's a food fight going on up inside, so that you can't really control. You don't really know how to stop this food fight. Everything's just going everywhere and it's just a mess. So sometimes it feels like an internal meltdown. Some of the ways in which I've been able to like find support is through having like one or two like support people and people I just go to, trust and reach out to if something's like starting to feel a bit off. Because kind of like you, I've been able to map out different signs as to when I'm kind of going into this doom spiral or when I'm starting to shut down. And when I notice like one or two of these signs, I might reach out to that support person or contact person and let them know, hey, this is happening. And usually they would remind me to focus on my breathing, or they'd remind me to get some water and be a bit proactive in how I go about burnout. So it's not like too late, and I'm trying my best to fight against everything. So those are some of the things they might tell me. I also think it's helpful to set boundaries and to let people know that you might not be able to like respond to messages. And this could be like through a LinkedIn post, for example, so people know what you're going through, know you're not intentionally ignoring them, and know that you just need a bit of a break. You need to step away for a little bit, but when you return, you'll try to like respond to them. When it comes to messages, like I know when I'm in burnout, sometimes my parents try to message me, they can't really get a hold of me, and they might think I'm ignoring them. So I think being able to find the energy to communicate with people saying, hey, I won't be able to respond for like at least X amount of time could be helpful in interpersonal communications, interpersonal relationships. And it can, I think, even make relationships stronger, because you're establishing those boundaries and you're able to take care of yourself, so you can eventually take care and support others. So I think setting boundaries is a really big part in managing burnout and overwhelming feelings.
Oh, boundaries are a big part, you know, and I think I'm a word nerd. I love linguistics. And so, you know, words and how we use them, and how do we sort of, each person kind of defines them. And we tend to have this sort of emotional response or charge, you know, when we hear a certain word. And I was like, you know, boundaries sometimes puts people on this sort of an abrasive, because, you know, I grew up, we didn't talk about boundaries. Nobody in, you know, I was born in the 70s.
Yeah, I understand. I'm the same as you. It was like, right? You can't really set any boundaries. Even if you didn't want to talk about something, they were like, this is my house, my rules. If you don't like it, find somewhere else to live. That was
right.
Physically.
Exactly. Yes, you nailed it. But what's really interesting, right? And in the unveiling method, I mean, boundaries is one of the big components, because burnout is chronic, consistent, unmet needs. So you are going unnourished. So you're suffering from a malnourishment of your human needs and your sensory blueprint. And the only way to effectively be able to get out of burnout is to identify what those needs are for you, because they're different for each person in each season of their life, and to have what I call, not boundaries anymore, they're boundaries, but I think this is really kind of resonates more with me, and I think it resonates sort of with the people that I work with too, is we have success enablers. We have scaffolding, right? Because when we're talking about boundaries, sometimes it's like, it feels like we're putting up this wall that we're pushing against other people. And I don't think that's always what serves us, especially when we're looking to advocate and have ourselves nourished in the way that works for us. But we also have a responsibility, not just to ourselves, but we have a responsibility in the sense that we communicate with the people in our life. Because we can't just run around going, okay, well, I'm putting up this boundary and, you know, don't talk to me, don't expect me to message you back kind of thing, because then that doesn't really serve anybody. And I love how you approach this, because it's kind of like, I'm going to reach out. I'm just going to put a little post out there. I'm going to let people know this is where I can kind of manage my energy in the moment. I can communicate with the most people and with the least amount of like effort, but still be able to go, hey, I'm acknowledging that, you know, normally I'm responding in things and I'm not right now. And I want you to know kind of what's going on. But it's also stepping into that bravery, that vulnerability, and that courage to go, I'm not okay right now. And this is what I need. And that's huge, Ben. Like, that's really big.
Yeah, it can be really scary setting boundaries. And I think a lot of that is from trauma in the past and people saying it's disrespectful to set boundaries, or it's selfish or self-centered to think about yourself. And then there's some people who just tell you, why don't you think about other people for a change? And it just, growing up, I just always learned to bend over backwards, not set any boundaries whatsoever, and to just accommodate others as much as I can, even if it causes me to like burn out, even if it causes me a lot of stress or to be overwhelmed, because there have been many times where I've had to cancel my own plans for the day because someone scheduled a last minute meeting. Or there have been times when people cancel last minute without letting me know what's going on. There have been times when I really didn't want to do something, but people would just tell me, usually these people would be my parents, they'd be like, you have to do it because it's the right thing to do. Think about how other people would like react in the same situation. They would also try to guilt me by saying, just remember your decision the next time you need something from them. So they tried to instill in me that boundaries and like how we act is always transactional. And it's always like an eye for an eye. If you do this, they're going to do the same thing back in the future. They're going to hold this 10-year grudge on me. From the time I didn't really want to go to like a movie or something. So that's kind of how I grew up in the situation in which I grew up in, where we weren't really allowed to set boundaries, we weren't really allowed to talk about boundaries, and boundaries were just seen as disrespectful. And as I've been talking to more people in the disability community, I've been learning that boundaries are essential to living your everyday life, and that we can't really function as a human being without setting these boundaries, because we need to take time to care for ourselves. And the way it's often been framed to me within the disability community is that you can't really help people if you yourself aren't 110%. And by helping yourself, you are helping other people, because you are giving yourself the energy you need to, let's say, create posts that inspire people, or create different presentations that can really inform and educate people that you may not have the spoons to do if you didn't set those boundaries in the first place. So as I've been doing more disability advocacy and meeting more people within our community, I've been able to kind of reframe how boundaries, how I see boundaries and what boundaries are, which have been really helpful.
Oh gosh, it makes such a difference. And, you know, I had a mentor share with me one time, and this really changed how I felt about boundaries, because I always grew up in a similar way to you, Ben. It was like, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, thank you and please. And you do what you're told, and you don't disappoint or let anybody down, even if you're miserable and you just push through. If you said you're going to do it, by golly, you better do it by hook or by crook. If you got to drag yourself over the finish line, kind of thing. And, to the detriment of myself. And I think that leads to a lot of self-denial. We begin to check out of our bodies. We begin to, even though we may feel these really big of feelings, we may be absolutely exhausted, we push it down. We put it behind a wall and we say, not now. I'll maybe deal with you later, but I can't deal with you because I got to keep going. I can't, right? Or I should.
That's
and
just me right now, just having to keep going, feeling really unproductive and really guilty if I take a break, feeling like I'm letting people down if I don't respond to their messages, feeling like I'm just slacking off if I'm like lying in my bed not wanting to do anything. And that's, I guess, kind of how I've been raised to feel when I'm like feeling down or unproductive, or I've been or I feel guilty for feeling negative emotions and just kind of just try to deny their existence, or say, hey, these people have it worse than me. My emotions don't really, they're not as bad as it could be. So in a way, how I've been raised has taught me to implicitly gaslight myself into believing my emotions don't matter, because different people might have it worse or might be in a worse situation from me. And I think that self denial, and I think that gaslighting has come from not being able to feel my emotions like as a child, or not being able to express my emotions, or being called overdramatic or attention seeking if I feel anything negative. That's always how my parents or how teachers or peers saw me, if I ever broke down crying or if I ever tried to come to them with genuine concerns, whether it's depression or loneliness or friendlessness, or how do you do this, how do you do that, that either call me over dramatic or they just tell me to figure out on my own. And I wasn't really able to establish that trusting relationship in which my emotions, I began to feel confident within my emotions. So I've always been questioning if my emotions were real or if my emotions were appropriate for different situations. So that's kind of the household I grew up in.
Yeah. And you know, what led to how I started to change the way that I felt and thought about boundaries was my mentor asked me, said, Carol Jean, how can anyone ever respect your yes if they never hear you say no? And boy, did that hit home. That really hit home. I had to really think about that. It didn't make sense to me at first. I had to really think on that for a while. I had to sit with that. How can anyone ever respect your yes if they never hear you say no? And just by the way, folks, no is a complete sentence. N-O, period. It doesn't have to have, you know, because or any of the stuff. And now I will say, if you are in relationship with someone and it is a relationship that you value, it is a relationship that you want to nurture, then no, comma, because is pretty important. How people take a no when you give sort of your feeling and response and process and reasoning behind the because, that actually opens up some communication. It doesn't mean that you change your answer. It doesn't mean you feel bad about it. It's just in the context that this other person matters to me and them understanding, right? This is about understanding. Them having an opportunity for me to share so they can understand me better. That's sometimes where we can shift, where we say no, period, or where we say no, comma, because. And, yes, you know, that makes a difference. I mean, is that something that has been kind of part of your journey in self-advocacy as well, Ben?
Yeah, I've always felt the need to justify myself in every single decision I make, because the follow-up question is always, well, why? Why can't you do this? Why are you not able to do this? And in speaking to other like self-advocates and their experiences, I've gradually become a bit more comfortable saying I just don't have the energy right now, or I might kind of, instead of saying an outright no, which I used to do, I might say I can consider it in the future. I'd be happy to go to future events, but I might not be able to hang out today. Just this past weekend, I actually set a boundary with my mom by, like, she asked me to, if I wanted to, like, come over just for dinner on Sunday night, and I had to tell her I was sick, but I'd be more than happy to come, like, the following week when I maybe am not feeling as bad. So I've been able to learn how to shift my language to be a bit less concrete no and a bit more, hey, I'm open to this in the future, which has really helped when it comes to interpersonal relationships. When it comes to...
Oh my goodness, yes, that's so good. Always, I have not now. I say not now.
Yeah, I think that's another really good, really good response to something you might not have the energy to do in the moment or might not want to do in the moment. I think part of why boundaries are so hard is for two reasons. The first is more societal and how we were always taught, like in school, when you apply for a job, you can't really be picky. You have to make an income, so you might choose a job even if it's a toxic job, or even if it's not really quite in line with what you want to do, because you have to make money. So in a way, the job kind of has this toxic control over you, where it's like, okay, we can just release you and find someone else, instead of you having agency over your own decisions and being like, no, I actually don't want to work in this place that's really ableist, or this place that doesn't really respect me as a disabled person. I think society just trains us or teaches us to be grateful for the bare minimum, be grateful you even have a job. Some people are unemployed. Well, a lot of people are, 85% of the autistic community is unemployed. So they just teach us and guilt us into being grateful for what we have and to not really complain about our situation because we have better than other people. When in reality, we should be able to feel our own emotions and we should be able to set our own boundaries and be like, no, I really don't want this. And I really don't want to be treated like this in this job. I want to be treated with respect. I wanted to be accommodated for my own individual needs and differences. So that's the first reason. I think it's more societal and society treating us like we should be grateful for the bare minimum. And the second reason, I think, is RSD. Like, rejection can also be a really powerful and influential factor when it comes to setting boundaries and the lack of boundaries. A lot of times when I tried to set boundaries as a kid, I was always rejected by my peers. No one wanted to hang out with me. They thought I was really strict. They thought I was really mean just because I said no quite a bit. They oftentimes thought I was way too honest. So as a result, I didn't really have any friends. And I grew up not really having too many friends because I set these really stringent boundaries on people. And there were times when I just really didn't want to do something and I just let people know, hey, I don't want to do this. And then they never invited me to another event ever again. So, but as I grew into the advocacy community, as I said, I think being able to phrase things in a different way leads to less rejection by indicating that you'd be more than open to like doing an activity with someone in the future. And the way you frame like that boundary to other people can make a difference in how they interact with you going forwards or if they want to interact with you. So I think wording and phrasing makes a huge difference when it comes to boundaries.
It really does. And, you know, as we're kind of wrapping up the conversation, I have something I want to share with you, and I'd love to hear sort of how that lands with you, what this brings up for you. So earlier in December, I had the honor and the pleasure of sitting in the room with Lori Harder. And Lori shared a question for all of us in the room. And it really, really impacted me in a big way. Like, I was like, oh, I've never thought of it like this. And Lori said, what is most important in the long run? Is it that you disappointed other people or that you disappointed yourself? What do you think about that, Ben?
I think that's a really powerful phrase and powerful question for a few reasons. The first is just thinking, like, 70 years from now, how are we going to see ourselves? Are we going to see ourselves as our own person or as this societally created person who is nothing more than what other people want them to be? When we are on our deathbed, do we want to die knowing who we actually are, or do we want to die knowing how society thinks we should have been? And I think when it's phrased in that way, where it's just like, who do we want to be? Would we even recognize our true selves 40 years, 50 years, 60 years from now? It's just a really powerful thought, a really powerful question. And I think a large part of why boundaries are so hard is because it's, at least for me, I'm a people pleaser. I hate making people upset. I hate making people disappointed. And to me, many times that's just my greatest fear. Just people yelling at me, people saying how much I messed up, people just coming to me with like 50 different things that I need to do better. And I just kind of like how we started the conversation, when that happens, I just shut down and things get even worse. So I think phrasing it in that way, like, do we want to be our own selves or do we want to be a person that isn't our own selves, but one that is created by the people around us? I think it's an important decision to make and an important consideration when it comes to living our lives.
Because I can tell you, I think one of the biggest experiences that I had and probably one of the worst burnouts of my life was when I sat back and I was so overwhelmingly disappointed in myself. Sure, I believed other people were disappointed in me, but where I felt the biggest drain and the most discomfort and sadness was that I had disappointed myself. It wasn't through anything that I hadn't, you know, been doing, because I had been doing myself to death and, you know, making sure everyone else was happy. But it was in the process of that, of not stopping and asking myself, what's important to me? Because I was so busy first starting with what was important to everybody else and making sure everyone else was okay and everybody else had what they wanted. I was disappointed that I'd never said and loved myself enough, or at all at the time. I didn't even love myself at all at the time. But to stop and just go, okay, what do I need? What's important to me? What aligns with my values? What sparks my joy? What is my passion? What is my purpose? What are my dreams? And am I living them every day? And I think it was in that place that when Lori said that, I was like, wow, yes, that was a big place. And I think a lot of us in burnout experience, it's that we have this very heavy weight and this feeling of disappointing ourselves, but we are so busy trying not to disappoint anyone else.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is like social conditioning as well, because we're taught like the gold standard is independence, being able to do things on our own. And when we're not able to do things on our own, when we're not able to support our own selves, we just feel really disappointed in ourselves. When we have to rely on others, like that disappointment comes in. And I feel like when we're like taught that we have to, like keep our emotions to ourselves. We can't really feel our true emotions. If we express any bit of our true emotions, then people are going to say we're a toxic people, you know, and they're just going to abandon us or leave us or just say we're too much. So we're not really able to express or feel our true emotions. And many times that can, when we have glimpses of our true emotions, like when we are feeling sad, when we do want to cry, that kind of gets to like the guilt I was talking about earlier, where it's like, are we truly feeling these emotions, or is that just us being overdramatic? And then as a result, we're not really able to express them because we're not really even sure if we're supposed to feel these emotions in the first place in that very same context. And we also feel, at least for me, I feel a lot of guilt reaching out to people saying, hey, I feel really bad today, because I feel scared about like them saying I'm too much, or I feel really scared about being an overwhelming burden on the other person and just taking away from their happiness and well-being, even if it's what I wanted in the moment. I think a lot of it also comes from parenting and just being told it's self-centered to think about ourselves. It's self-centered to think about our own emotions. It's selfish. It's like whatever you want to call it, arrogant to like put our needs first and our emotions first. I was always taught to put other people before me, and I was always taught to put other people's feelings and think about how other people would think for once or would like feel for once. And I was always taught to just put others before me. And as a result, I just always pushed my emotions aside, deemed them unimportant. And I think that in the long run was really harmful, because I wasn't able to see how important my needs truly were when it came to my emotions and like how I was feeling in that given moment in time. So I think it's important to be able to tell your child or whoever like you're caring for, whoever like you're supporting, that like their emotions are valid, and to come at it from a non-judgmental angle where everyone is allowed to feel their true feelings, because their true feelings are theirs and no one can feel or understand the weight of that feeling except for that person. And something that might be no big deal to someone could be the entire world to that person. So I think it's important to come from a non-judgmental angle where we can just support and validate each other, no matter who we are, no matter what situation we're in, and no matter the intersections that we have that might differ. I think it's important to be validating of all experiences.
I completely agree with you. And I think in that, we also have to step into the ownership and the responsibility that we have for our own response to someone else's experience. Just because it's different from our own doesn't mean that what they are experiencing is any less or that it's wrong, and that somehow that ours is the only way. So I think that's in part of this conversation, especially around burnout. And one of the biggest things being identifying and feeling safe to experience our emotions and to be able to express those emotions and to be able to also know that just because we're feeling this way today in this moment doesn't mean this is how we're always going to feel. And I think that's one of the things that was really hard for me. And I know it's been something my clients have expressed as well. It's, you know, a lot of times we think, oh gosh, this is how I'm always going to feel. And it's one of those thinking traps that I talk about in the Unveiling Method. And so I think it's really important, not only that we as individuals recognize that, okay, I am allowed to have my feelings. This is probably just the way that I might be feeling now. It's not how I'm always going to feel. And it can be different from someone else's. And I have to honor how I respond to other people's emotions, just like they need to honor mine. And I think that's a great place for us to wrap up the conversation today. Thank you so much for joining me today, Ben. Thank you for being a guest and for sharing your burnout experience and the ways that you have been approaching self-advocacy as you've recognized your needs in the process of burnout and burnout restoration. Ben, is there anything you'd like to share with everybody before we go today? Hey there, we are taking a quick pause so I can share some life-giving info with you for just a sec. Are you tired of feeling tired, struggling to keep up with your daily task, and noticing a decline in your overall well-being? You're not alone. If you're nodding along to these questions, it might be time to take a closer look at what's really going on. I'm here to tell you about a quiz that could change the way you approach your energy levels and well-being. Are you experiencing burnout without even realizing it? It happens more often than you think. Picture this. You're waking up after a full night's sleep, but you still feel exhausted. You can't remember the last night you didn't wake up at least twice or spend hours just trying to fall asleep. Tasks that used to be a breeze now seem harder, or you catch yourself avoiding them altogether. And you find yourself withdrawing from the things and people you love. Sound familiar? Take my burnout quiz to uncover the signs and symptoms you might be overlooking. It's the first step to reclaiming your energy and feeling better. Plus, it's completely free and takes just a few minutes to complete. So if you're ready to break free from burnout and start living a more energized life, visit my website, Whittington Wellbeing. Your future self will thank you for it. Remember, recognizing burnout is the first step to feeling better. Don't wait until it's too late. Take action now and take back control of your life and energy. You're worth it, my friend.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor and pleasure to have been a part of your show. If you want to connect with me, I'm on LinkedIn. And my LinkedIn name is just my name here, Ben Van Hook, B-E-N space V-A-N-H-O-O-K. And that's where I do most of my advocacy work. Thank you so much for having me on again. And I'd love to continue this conversation in the future.